Oh, I've got an intro.
Yeah?
Atonement! Welcome to the show!
Welcome to Best Original Podcast. My name's Ben Vanell.
My name's Timothy Clark.
This is a podcast about the Best Picture nominees at the Academy Awards. We go year by year. We do movie by movie. We break them down, whether they deserve to be nominated, whether they deserve to win, what we liked about them, what we didn't like.
Very good, Ben. Yeah. I can see you looking around the room, very struggling to remember what the premise of this show is.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I love it.
Joining us with a bit of skeptical sass already is, how would you describe yourself?
I just would use my name.
Okay. You don't want to be like a criminologist, writer,
no,
performer.
I'm none of those things.
Queen of improv.
Oh, yeah. Queen of improv. See? See?
Rosie Vernell joins us to discuss Atonement on this episode.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Okay. Love the attitude.
Yeah. No, good. I'm just a bit skeptical now after this intro. I don't know.
Skeptical of what?
If you guys know what the fuck you're doing.
Hey, I've been doing this for 5 years.
And I've been doing this for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
So together.
2.5 years.
Okay. But we're talking about the film Atonement on this episode, directed by Joe Wright, starring James McAvoy, Keira Knightley, Saoirse Ronan, amongst others. Gave me a very unsure look.
Yeah, I don't think that's it. I think it's Saoirse.
I thought it was Saoirse.
No, it's definitely E. It's Saoirse.
I believe it's Saoirse. I think I've heard it pronounced that way by an Irish person.
Oh, okay. You know a lot of Irish people, do you?
I've heard them on the internet.
You've heard them on the internet?
Yeah.
Just the way they type. This is one of the the five nominees of the 2008 ceremony.
Yes.
In addition to There Will Be Blood and Juno from previous episodes, and Michael Clayton and No Country for Old Men, the winner.
Yes.
This was released in 2007, like you said, directed by Joe Wright. Do you have a bit of a plot description there, Benjamin?
I've got a really long one, so everybody strap in.
Yeah, this is not a... This is not a very succinct movie. There's a lot of moving parts in this one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like an old-timey car, like a jalopy going down a 1935 London street.
That's it.
Beep, beep. And that's where we open this picture of yore. Jump in anytime.
No, it's not.
1935 London, that's where we start.
Oh, not in the car.
Yeah, not in a jalopy.
Oh, there's still some cars around, you know. It's about the scene. It's the atmosphere.
I'm going to start a bit more generally. Robbie, the son of a wealthy family's housekeeper, who is educated thanks to the family's financial backing, has a brief affair with Cecilia, the eldest member of that family. The brief moments they share together are seen by Bryony, the younger sister of Cecilia. A budding writer, the jealous Bryony uses these moments as supporting evidence when she believes she witnesses Robbie assaulting her 15-year-old cousin Lola. Robbie is sent to jail, and then volunteers for the army to get out early as World War II has begun and soldiers are needed. Cecilia and Bryony both become nurses, and Robbie meets up with Cecilia by chance before he leaves for battle. Robbie ends up on the beach at Dunkirk, where an infected wound makes him ill, while Bryony and Cecilia experience the horrors of tending to the wounded back home. Bryony apologizes to Cecilia and Robbie after he has returned from the war, realizing that it was not Robbie but in fact a family friend who assaulted Lola. They do not forgive Bryony. But in a framing device set many years later, we learn Bryony, a successful author now in her later years and terminally ill, made up the ending where Robbie and Cecilia are happily living together. In fact, they both died during the war and she made up their reunion in order to give them some form of happiness, posthumously, which she felt she owed them. The end.
The listeners can't see this, but we're recording this whilst me and Rosie are sitting on Ben's knees while he bumps us up and down in front of the fireplace.
All right, kids, off to bed.
Off your pop.
Sweet dreams. That is the plot of Atonement. Mm-hmm. Now, you guys had not seen this film before viewing it for this podcast.
This was my first time seeing this.
Yeah, correct.
Mm. Right.
Now, Ben, you saw this when it came out or previously or after that?
After it came out, yeah. Okay. Not, I didn't see it at the time. I think I was recommended it by a partner, maybe.
Okay.
So I would have seen it maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
But I had only seen it once before seeing it this time. I remember really liking it on that first viewing. I think I was a little skeptical. All I knew was it was sort of like a romance, very British. I didn't know much about the plot. I think I had seen some of that long tracking shot, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, I thought like maybe it was a chick flick. But
excuse you.
Hey, I'm just being honest.
Chicks like quality films.
And I ended up really liking it. What do you guys think after viewing it for one time?
Before seeing it, absolutely was in the same camp as you.
Mm-hmm.
Before you had seen it, like when this came out, I would have been 16, mm-hmm. and this to me just—I was just getting into the Oscars, and this looked like typical David Lean, Merchant Ivory,
right?
High-priced British drama. Mm-hmm. Like I thought the plot would be similar to the start. You know, he's from the lower class, she's the upper class. They have an affair, but then the war happens and he has to go off and kill Hitler.
Yeah,
and then he
sure.
comes back and he's the guy who killed Hitler. And then everyone loves him.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah.
A classic story.
A classic chick flick.
Yes.
He shot Hitler's brain.
Yeah.
So I just thought this was a run-of-the-mill drama. I don't like the term, but Oscar-baity kind mm-hmm. of film.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I avoided it.
Yep.
It would, be too sentimental, be too...
Too many emotions.
Exactly.
Ew, yeah. Icky.
Me as a 16-year-old boy, absolutely, I'm not going to...
Yep.
Yeah. I'm too busy watching the Dark Knight trailer again.
Yes.
But on watching it the first time, it completely blew away any expectations I had. Loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Right.
It completely reversed every notion that I thought this movie was going to be,
mm-hmm.
and we'll go into it a bit more when we talk about individual scenes and plots. But if you have accidentally skipped through all of Ben's plot description,
yep.
and now I'm starting to see a bit of a flaw in the way we're spacing this out. If you haven't seen it, I would say definitely forget everything Ben just said. Go back, watch Atonement.
Yeah, I think we're taking it as under assumption that you've seen it before listening to this. But, that's interesting. Rosie, what did you think of it? What did you think of it beforehand?
Look, I am reluctantly going to completely agree with everything that Tim has just said.
Right. That's just a bad space to be in your life.
It's really, I've got to go.
I'm with Tim Clark. Yeah. Oh, boy.
Tim's right.
Now, that's a t-shirt.
It's a
shirt that says, I'm with Tim Clark, and an arrow pointing left, and I'm the only person who wears it.
I had zero interest in ever watching this movie. I wouldn't have watched it if you hadn't told me to watch it.
Yeah, right.
You
would have lived your entire life without having seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the reasons is I am really not a big fan at all of Keira Knightley. I really struggle to watch her in anything.
Mm-hmm.
But in this movie, like, she was so annoyingly British
mm-hmm.
that I liked it.
Okay.
Like, she was so, like, the accents, like, the way she spoke and everything was so extreme that I was like, I can handle this because it's a caricature.
Right, because it was in the context of the family, like, everyone's this ridiculously British person.
Yeah, like, they were just so... Like Bryony, the little girl, like she absolutely nailed I couldn't believe that that's a little Irish girl.
Yeah.
Like she was just so marvellous. Fucking hell. Like they were just so. So I actually, I totally.
I think Rosie's basing her impression on posh spies.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Like not only did I enjoy Keira Knightley, but I really liked the movie.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it. I thought as I was watching it, I was like, yeah, no, I can see why this was nominated. Like this is a fantastic film.
Okay.
But I'd read like about a year ago, I was going through this BuzzFeed article.
Okay.
And it was like...
Which Atonement character are you? Oh, I'm the fat twins.
I'm the chav mate who gets really annoying.
Yeah. And it had like biggest plot twists ever or something, and Atonement was actually in it.
Oh,
So I couldn't remember what it was, but I just knew that there was something.
Right.
Which actually I found it made me more engaged because I was like, what's
wondering
it going to be?
What it's going to be.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a – I didn't know. I didn't know anything apart from the general sort of vibe of what it was. I didn't know there was a plot twist coming the first time I saw it.
Right.
And it, I think, very, very heavily benefited my viewing of it.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I didn't. I thought it was a bit – I don't know. I kind of felt it was a bit meaningless.
Really?
The twist.
The twist when it was like, no, actually they both died in the war. I was like, well, yeah, but you showed me them together.
Mm.
So I'm going to remember that.
Isn't that the point of the movie and the book?
Yeah, I think that's the point of the twist is it's a meta-textual twist where it's just reflecting on the nature of films and storytelling as a whole where audiences going through something so grueling as A, hearing a story about it, as well as B, audiences who have actually been through the war is more uplifting and, for lack of a better word, good in the long run.
I think also more specifically, like within the context of the film, the character of Bryony saying at the end, like, I wanted to give them a happy ending. The fact that you are more attached to the happy ending because you saw it first in chronological order is like what she was going for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did find that the reason that she did that, say I wanted to give them a happy ending, I did find that to be very, very sweet and romantic.
Mm. Okay.
Like I just thought that's like one of the most beautiful things ever.
That's very interesting because that relates to the questions that I'm going to ask you both a little bit later on.
The question is, what's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen?
No, the question is, what did the end of the movie mean?
This little girl, she looks so old. What's going on?
That was one of my favorite things, though. The movie
hairstyle,
and it happens in so many movies. They can be really, really good movies, but if you've got a character that's aging, so they have to get different actors to play it.
Yes.
They're like, well, they've got to have the same haircut for their whole life. Otherwise, no one's going to know who it is.
I don't entirely disagree with that, though.
Well, when she was the nurse.
Yes.
And all the nurses dispersed. Yes. The dispersed nurse.
Yeah, the dispersal of the nurses.
Yeah. And it zoomed in on her for the first time at that age. She had the haircut. And I went, it's Bryony.
That's how I know it's her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But isn't that just so ridiculous? No one keeps the same haircut for their entire life.
Yeah. Vanessa Redgrave in this movie has the hairstyle of a child.
Yeah, she does look ridiculous. I think that's where it...
I knew that there was... I knew that's
insane.
Yeah.
I knew there was a twist at the end going in, and I also knew that Vanessa Redgrave was in it.
Right.
So in my mind, I thought, the twist is they just got a very famous actress to play her at the end.
Oh, right.
I thought that was it.
You thought the twist was stunt casting.
That's it, yeah. I thought, like, Vanessa Redgrave's in this for 5 minutes. At the end, she goes, well, that's the story of me, the dispersed nurse. And I really atoned for my sins.
I guess
Vanessa
I can
Redgrave,
say that.
Vanessa Redgrave, over and out.
Well, that would have been a twist.
Yeah, you were in for a surprise then when there was more.
Yeah, significantly more.
Yeah.
Shall we go through the awards then? Because this film, and you might know off the top of your head, Tim, what the most nominations a film has ever gotten.
11?
What film?
Titanic.
That sounds right.
Oh, maybe I'm confusing with wins. I think
right.
Yeah, most wins is tied between Titanic, Ben-Hur and Lord of the Rings.
Okay. For 7 wins?
For 11 nominations each.
Right.
That's me just saying off the top of my head, but what were you leaning into, Ben?
Well, this film was nominated for 6 Oscars. Was it nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Art Direction, Best Cinematography, Best Costume Design, Best Original Score, Best Picture, and Best Supporting Actress for...
Saoirse.
Yeah.
Hannah.
Wow. She was so young when she got
she
nominated
was
for an Oscar.
Youngest ever
at the
nominee
time.
At the time, yes.
And then it's what? Winds of the...
Beast of the Southern Wild.
Wild. She's the youngest now.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It only won Best Original Score.
Hmm.
Very well deserved. Sorry, I was expecting Rosie to say something.
Hey, so was I.
Sorry about
so
that.
So was I.
The Queen of Improv strikes again.
To hear you read out...
I love
out...
your episode of Thank God You're Here, where you walked in.
You walk through the door.
This is interesting.
Well, they never asked. Are you guys going to say something?
Hearing you read out the nominations,
yep.
I go, yes, yes, yes. Like, I loved the score. I loved the cinematography.
Cinematography is maybe, I think, my favorite thing about the movie.
I loved the costumes as well.
Yep.
The emerald dress, excuse me, hello.
I mean, it's a bit of a cliche for like a period drama to get a costume nomination, but I think it's well deserved in this
case.
It
really stood out, yeah. I thought. Yeah.
Because it had to balance between three different time periods. Like,
sure.
You know, 1935 London, beep beep, jalopies, and then...
still don't remember that part.
The war. I mean, it went by really fast because it was a fast car.
Yeah, okay. And well, compared to horses
the
at
war,
the time.
The soldiers' costumes as well as the nursing costumes as well. So I had to juggle these three and was fantastic.
And hey, that interview scene at the end.
Yeah.
Completely different style.
Yeah, exactly. They nailed it. They nailed it.
Hair and makeup didn't get anything for the same
for the
bob
haircut.
Cut.
Yeah.
They could have tried harder.
I was going to say before in regards to that, I'm glad, and it doesn't seem, at the time this wouldn't have even come up, but the fact that they did cast different actors rather than do the Irishman thing of CGI-ing them, it's much better.
It was 12 years ago in terms of CGI.
I think more in terms of my dislike of the Irishman.
Right.
I just wish
still
that
haven't
they
finished it. Still haven't got through it.
Wow.
It's taken me a long time.
I wish they had done what Atonement did, just cast different people. Because I think despite the haircut being ridiculous, it clearly tracks as the same character and they're three really good performances.
Yeah.
It really would have been good if in the Irishman to have De Niro playing himself and then old De Niro was Vanessa Redgrave and young De Niro was Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, but they all had the same blonde bob. That would have been beautiful.
Yeah, the bob cut.
Yeah.
Bob cut Goldthwait. Took a while to get that one out there, but I reckon not worth it.
Speaking of Saoirse Ronan, Saoirse.
Look, I'm probably wrong.
I'm sure you are.
I hear that a lot.
I think... I'm very glad that she got nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Do you guys think anyone else in this movie should have been nominated for acting?
I think James McAvoy.
Alfie Allen. Yeah.
Popped in for
one scene?
Two scenes?
Yeah, and one speaking scene.
Holding those suitcases. Bags. Yeah.
That did make my notes of Alfie Allen's in this.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moving on.
James McAvoy, you reckon?
I reckon James McAvoy, because we talked about this on the There'll Be Blood episode. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty weak best actor lineup. You've got Daniel Day-Lewis, There Will Be Blood, and George Clooney, Michael Clayton. I think those were real outliers and definites.
Yeah, clearly above the pack. But then it was Johnny Depp for Sweeney Todd.
Oh, really?
I think Johnny Depp, Sweeney Todd, even though he won the Globe that year.
For musical or comedy.
For musical or comedy, but they split it up. I reckon James McAvoy could have been in this. If you want to do a bit of category fraud, I reckon he could have gotten something in Best Supporting Actor, considering it's such a big ensemble piece.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting performance. Mm. I think I read a quote from him saying it was his hardest role because the guy is so straightforward. There's there's not a lot going on behind the eyes. There's not a lot of complexity in how the character of Robbie thinks and acts.
Yeah.
But he portrays what is there really convincingly.
Yeah.
I'm having a look through his filmography. This is a real turning point for him before he starts getting a bit more high-profile Hollywood work, because the next year's Wanted.
Right.
A couple of years after that, Conspirator and X-Men First Class, which kind of just catapults him. Now he's just doing blockbusters.
Yeah,
he's just doing
yeah.
X-Men movies, Split and the Glass movies.
Last King of Scotland was before
that was 2005, 6?
Right, yeah, and for Keira Knightley as well, she was in, was that Emma? The one of the Jane Austen adaptations. No,
yeah, she was in Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah.
Also directed by Joe Wright.
Yeah, and that was a few years earlier as well. So both her and McAvoy, you know, were famous. They were in big movies.
Yeah, she'd been in Bend It Like Beckham. I mean, we knew who she was.
That's true.
The Pirates movies.
Yeah,
this is the same year that the third Pirates movie came out.
Oh, right.
It's the third. So she's a megastar, essentially. Yeah. But McAvoy is about to become one. And I think you can see why. He's fantastic in this.
I reckon, like, the intensity and the anger and the genuine emotion he brings to this is why they cast him as Gnomeo in Gnomeo and Juliet, as well as the sequel to Gnomeo and Juliet 2.
Yeah, that's clearly.
That subtlety of performance.
I mean, I don't think it's award worthy, but I did think Keira Knightley was great.
Yeah.
This is my favourite thing that I've seen her in, because I don't like her.
Yeah.
I think I'm the opposite of you, Rosie. I really like her as an actress. I really like Keira Knightley. I thought she was nominated for Imitation Game.
And
I thought I'd love her in that movie.
Yeah,
it's
actually
a fine movie, but I think she's great.
I'm a big fan of that movie. And I like her in it. I forgot she was in it. I forgot a lot of that movie, to be honest.
Yeah. But you like it a lot.
I remember liking it.
Yeah. An emotionally stunted man who loves computers.
I was watching a mirror for 2.5 hours. Actually, speaking of The Imitation Game, Benedict Cumberbatch is in this movie.
Yeah.
Also young.
Also a fucking baby, yeah. He's so young. But he still has the deepest voice in cinema.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He plays the villain, right? He's the villain of this story. I thought he played it well.
Yeah.
Small part. Mm. Yeah, fantastic. Great to see him pop up.
Having seen this before, I forgot he was in it. But he's great. And it's like, it's one of those of course castings.
Yeah, isn't it?
Like especially in retrospect.
He does do well as a villain. Yeah. He's perfect for it.
I really like Saoirse Ronan's nomination for Best Supporting Actress. I thought she was fantastic as well.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it a bit last week. It's a bit of an eclectic race.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think there was a real two-person race that year, Tilda Swinton and Cate Blanchett.
Right.
Tilda winning. Like, I don't think in hindsight, Ruby Dee in American Gangster, I don't think many people look back on that as a favourable nomination.
I don't think many people look back on that movie, full stop.
I'm a supporter of American Gangster. Okay. I don't think that should... It's great that Ruby Dee got a Oscar nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe get to her for another movie. Okay. As well as Amy Ryan for Gone Baby Gone. Which I think was one of the only things that got.
Right.
And
which one's Amy Ryan?
Amy Ryan, she's the drugged out mother in Gone Baby Gone.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Then she went on to The Office.
Mm.
You know, like,
right. So she got nominated for Best
Supporting Actress. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which I love. I think that's a great, great character actor getting recognized in at the time, underseen film.
Yeah.
Right. But I reckon Saoirse Ronan, good on you. Hey, SR, if you're listening out there.
Yep.
Top of the morning to you. And hey, I would have ranked you top of the actresses
top
in
the
this
ranking.
Race. Top of the rankings. Top of the rankings to you.
Wait, who won? Cate Blanchett.
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton.
For what?
Michael Clayton.
Oh,
and hey,
yeah.
Nothing against you, TS. If you're listening, hey, top of the ranking to you.
I still haven't seen Michael Clayton, so I can't definitively say, but man, I probably would have given it to Saoirse. I think it's a really, really good performance with a lot of depth to it.
We're recording this and it might be out before the Oscars nominate. Hope that she gets another nomination for Little Women.
Yes.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, me neither, but I'm excited to. And I've become a massive fan of her, I guess, since Atonement.
Yeah.
A fantastic actor.
Since then, she's gone on. She's done a lot of stuff with Joe Wright as well.
Right.
Well, maybe not a lot. She did Hannah.
Yeah, basically. Which is fucking so good.
Have you seen Hannah, Rosie?
I've seen the first half before I turned it off.
Oh, boy. Wow, not enough Keira Knightley for you. Your favourite actress.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm just not in the mood for whatever it is I'm watching.
That's fair.
Sometimes a movie's so good it puts you in the mood for it.
Mm-hmm.
It brings you over. Other times I'm just not. I just don't want to watch this.
How did you go into Atonement? Were you in the mood for Atonement?
I was like, I've got to fucking watch this movie because I'm recording a podcast tomorrow. I have to watch it.
Yeah.
That is the best way to watch a movie.
I was like, God damn. Let's watch this 2-hour fucking movie on my Saturday night.
Hey, 2 hours is short. Some of the stuff I've watched lately, There Will Be Blood is very long.
Oh, forget that.
The Irishman is very long.
See, if you'd asked me to come on to do that one, I just would have said no.
Yeah, I watched this morning, very hungover.
You watched this morning?
I watched this morning, hungover, pounding coffees, trying to make my headache go away. Just made it worse. since the time in, especially she kind of slumped a little bit. I think she was really affected by her career, like in the stance of like Oscar nominations by The Lovely Bones.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
which
really?
was, I think it was pegged before it was released as a big Oscar player of that year.
I very clearly remember that because it was also Peter Jackson's follow-up from Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot riding on that.
Oh, and King Kong.
My
favorite of the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
The Lord
Three
of the
movies
Kings.
About little boys. Now one movie about a big ape.
But that's right. But Lovely Bones was adapted from a book. It was like, it was almost like he was starting, you know, the next phase.
Yeah.
After
they
King
got
Kong.
They got Ryan Gosling really fat and then fired him.
Yes.
And then got Mark Wahlberg.
I think he got himself fat. I think he did that without checking and they fired him because of it.
Well,
I think that's
really?
The story I've read. Yeah.
And then they got...
They did get Mark Wahlberg, though, didn't they?
They did for the... I was confusing the roles. They got Stanley Tucci, which was Lovely Bones' only nomination, which is crazy. And she did Arrietty and The Way Back, which I think underperformed at Oscars as well.
Right. But were good movies.
Yeah, good movies. I think what brought it back into like a critical darling light was Grand Budapest.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Because that was a big Oscar player.
It was, yeah.
And then Brooklyn.
Yeah. And
years after that.
She got nominated for that.
And Lady Bird. That's one.
Yeah, Lady Bird, the Greta Gerwig.
And she's back in the Oscars.
Back in a big way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think from Brooklyn, that's when she became best actress.
Yeah,
Rather than supporting, she was best actress.
Oh, she went from bottom to top of the ranking after Brooklyn.
Top of the ranking too, yeah.
Oh, no, now you're saying it.
That's good.
That's all I need. All you need to do is mention it twice so he can't edit around it.
I'm actually not a fan of the score.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, then one win.
It's one win, yeah.
The score is what pulled me in immediately. Because I was watching it because I had to.
Mm.
Not that I was being negative, but...
You know, it's a different context to being really excited to see it for your own good.
But I noticed that it was the music that was making me go, hey, this might be good.
Because the typewriter...
No, the typewriter was like, it's a bit annoying.
Yeah.
But not the typewriter thing. It was the music.
Just the actual general music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the typewriter was a little obnoxious on second viewing, a little bit obvious.
I love the typewriter.
Wow.
I loved it because it was just a great little leitmotif that kept reappearing, and they recreated it with sounds in the nursing chambers as well as the bombs in the battlefield. I really, really liked it.
That's interesting. I think it's a very showy sound design and score. I also think... in what is definitely my favourite scene of the movie, where the score mixes in with the guys singing on the beach. Did you notice that?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
that it actually, the tunes align. Didn't like it. I thought it was a little bit lame and a little bit obvious, but I can see it being impressive. You know, like it's hard to do. It would have been hard to line up and all that sort of stuff.
I didn't find that I was impressed by it.
Right. But you did like the music.
I liked like a lot of the music at the start of the film. It just was like, oh, and I don't know what I just thought it was going to be a really boring movie, to be honest.
Yeah, right.
But the music made me quite engaged. Mm. So
I think one of the biggest strengths of this movie is it sets itself up to be, by all first impressions, this is going to be a boring British drama.
Right.
That your mum would have loved growing up and made you watch a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You see ads for BBC shows you don't care about. Mm-hmm. What's Taggart? But I think the modernist...
It's really hit us.
Yeah, mum loves Taggart.
So is mine.
Yep.
Hey, shout out to you, mum.
Mums love Taggart.
Yeah. Hey, top of the ranking to your mum. I think
you're the lowest ranked child because of that joke.
I think the first real telling point that this is going to be flipping those expectations that you have is the modernist score.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's what the whole film is. It is flipping your expectations of what this film will be. You think this is going to be a struggle for these two characters to get together, and at the end they're going to have a triumphant get together after the war and live on happily ever after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but just by introducing R-rated elements so early on, the cunt letter.
Yep. Yeah.
Sorry, the C letter.
No, you were right the first time. Yeah. It's the cunt letter.
I definitely agree that it upends expectations because it's not boring.
No.
It moves so fast. It's really well cut. Mm. Like, it's so... Because of the repeating of scenes from different perspectives, it's interesting. It draws
that
you in.
That also surprised me.
Yeah.
I was like, great. That's so much more interesting to watch. Like, it's not boring at all when they do that.
Yeah.
I loved that.
I haven't read the novel, but I'm assuming that would be a big part of its selling point, the book.
Right.
Being able to jump between different people's perspectives at any one point.
Yep.
If you want to go back to score, so you didn't like the score, you were saying?
Not really, no. I thought it's probably the only element of the film that, for me, did play into expectations.
Knowing you, Ben, I think you're going to like Michael Clayton's score. That was also nominated along with Atonement and 310 to Yuma and The Kite Runner.
Okay.
I would have given it to Ratatouille, which also was nominated that year.
Right.
Which is one that I still listen to occasionally.
Really?
So upbeat. All these strings. Oh, love to listen to it. Sometimes put it on when I'm cooking. I've put a little rat under my hat. Oh. It's awful. Chews at my hair.
I've never seen Ratatouille.
Never seen Ratatouille.
Yeah. Not a huge Pixar fan.
No.
Well, I guess I'm doing a podcast with an idiot. As well as her brother, Ben Vanel.
Very nice.
There we bloody go.
Nicely done. This film was nominated in almost every category at the BAFTAs.
Oh, yeah, but they fucking ate it up.
But they only won, weirdly, Best Production Design and Best Film. So, like, both, like, McAvoy and Knightley were nominated. Ronan was nominated as well. But it only won Best Film.
Well, that
only
and production design. Yeah, it's very strange.
I can understand it for the acting ones because it's up against Daniel Day-Lewis,
sure,
as well as Julie Christie, who's a BAFTA royalty.
Yeah, okay.
And that was her comeback. I think we talked about last week in what was it called? Away from Her. I'm still here.
Away from
something
her.
Like that.
Yeah,
one of those titles that just describes nothing. What they're doing.
Yeah,
you're never really here.
I'm still here.
Make up your mind, Joaquin.
I'm not. Here?
I'm Bob Dylan?
I'm still here?
Oh, I'm not there?
I'm not there.
I was never really there. You were never really here. I'm still here.
I can see that within the context of the BAFTAs, that McAvoy and Knightley are such like young upstarts, and that British film industry would probably want to reward the older, more experienced actors.
I can see that. This also, strangely, this one... The Golden Globe for Best Drama.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. One of the few years where they had seven nominees.
Right.
Yeah. It's the five that we've talked about for this podcast.
Yep.
Minus Juno, as well as Eastern Promises, American Gangster, your favorite movie ever, as well as The Great Debaters.
What the fuck is that?
Great Debaters. It's Denzel Washington directed it. It's about him playing like the lead captain of a debate team at college. It's a rousing, like, sports movie.
Okay.
Huh. Yeah. And I think the fact that it was nominated for Best Drama at the Golden Globes is its only standing reputation, because I don't think it is a very well-known film these days.
Yeah.
I have no knowledge of that film.
That's my opinion. If you want a great debate me on it, let us know.
There it is.
Like the title of the film, The Great Debaters. Ben? You're looking at your notes pretty hard there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find
something here to get me out of this hole. It was nominated for Best Score as well and at the Globes and won.
Mm.
So, yeah, it won Best Drama, Best Score at the Globes, Best Film, Best Production Design at the BAFTAs, and only Best Score at the Academy Awards.
I reckon that Best... if it hadn't won Best Drama at the Globes, I could see this not getting the momentum... to be included in the Best Picture race of 2008 Oscars.
Interesting.
If one of these five films that we've talked about, if one of them has to go, I reckon in terms of the Academy voting for it, I reckon Atonement would have had the least support, I think.
That's okay. That's interesting. Maybe we'll return to that at the end of the episode. For now, what is you guys' favourite scenes? I'm just going to lead with this because it's going to come up inevitably. There's a 5 minute long single shot, which is absolutely my favorite moment of the film.
Fantastic.
I think this is the reason that this film comes up in discussion of cinema going into the future. I don't know that a lot else about it does make it noteworthy in terms of like all time classics, but that is one of the most incredible things I've seen in a movie.
It was bloody beautiful. The production design and the set layout of it,
yes,
is remarkable. It looks so beautiful. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Tobias Menzies has a little cameo as a drill instructor.
Oh, yes.
Walking around. Nice to see him pop up.
I wonder how they train horses to act like they've been shot in the head.
I mean, that is another element of the sort of like, I guess, verisimilitude or like reality that it nails, because I didn't even think about it. I just thought, oh, they're shooting horses.
I see. I got stuck.
They shoot horses,
there.
Don't they?
Was that nominated for Best Picture?
It was.
Fuck yeah, I love that movie. Anyway,
I got stuck at that bit.
Yeah.
At first, I was like, oh, that's horrible. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, how do they do that?
Yeah, right.
How do they do that?
I guess I just assumed the horses were entirely CG.
Maybe I assumed that after the shot. Yeah.
Oh, well, I was very convinced.
Maybe they can just lay down. I don't know.
Maybe they can.
But how does it go?
They're not actors. I guess that's true.
Yeah. I don't know. Joe Wright said they were a real diva on the set.
But yeah, I loved that. I loved the composition of almost every frame of that entire take is beautiful. Like, obviously where it ends up, where it's sort of panning along that railing outside the bar, where you get the houses, like the frontage, that you get the Ferris wheel in the background, and then you get the beach and the thousands and thousands of soldiers is incredible. But all through it, it looks amazing.
I went into this movie for the first time knowing that this was going to be a 5 minute scene.
Mm-hmm.
But as it was pulling back and tracking, I just thought, all right, so it's just a really, really long beach.
Right.
That's all, it's just like one long straight line, which is very impressive.
Because that is how it sort of starts. He comes over the, like, he crests the hill, and then from that point on, it's, yeah, following them down. And even that, yeah, like running through these like big, like messy lines of soldiers and people stopping them and being like, what's going on? Where do we go? Like all of that coordination. And yeah, as it's just that camera pulling back and people, you know, walking in front and stuff, that's impressive. Yep. But it gets more complicated after that.
Much more. It just unfolds like a diorama expanding out, and you see much more of this, I'm assuming, French beach.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Was that one of your favourites of the film?
No.
I didn't think it would be.
No.
Yeah.
Although it did, when I watched it, I thought, gee, I'm glad I watched Dunkirk, because it's the kind of thing like you look at what's happening there and think, God, that'd make a great movie.
Right. Because it is Dunkirk.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So
I actually weirdly started to get confused between the two movies. I guess I won't spoil Dunkirk, but there's stuff that happens in Dunkirk that I thought happened to James McAvoy and his couple of mates in this scene.
Yeah, or Harry Styles pops up.
Yeah.
No Harry Styles in Atonement.
He probably wasn't born yet.
No.
You just stopped watching, just like, when's Tom Hardy getting here?
Yeah.
I think that every single movie I watch. I go, where's Tom?
Right.
Why am I watching this?
Yeah, okay.
Hey, old man, shut up about your sled. When's Tom Hardy getting here?
I really liked the 1935 stuff, all of that. Thinking like
the stuff at the manor house and everything. Yeah,
yeah. Like even the bathing suits.
Yep.
When Keira Knightley is laying on the diving board and she's got the old swimming cap,
yep.
And Cumberbatch has got those funny little bathers on.
Yes.
And
it looks like he's about to lift a weight, like a triangular weight.
Yeah.
a dumbbell with circles on the side.
Dumbbell, yeah.
100 pounds. Steal Popeye's girlfriend.
I liked all of that stuff.
Right, right. So basically, you liked the setup.
Yeah, I did. And actually, of the setup, my favorite was the letter, when he's giving her the letter and then he's thinking back, and when he calls her name out the first time,
yeah,
and then he screams it.
Yeah.
Bradley.
Bradley!
I'm leaning with you, Rosie. I thought the first half was phenomenal. I loved it.
Right.
Not that the second half wasn't. It was just a bit more of a punch to the guts.
Yeah, sure.
I loved the editing on him screaming Bryony's name,
yes,
after the letter, and flashing back to writing the letter. I thought it was fantastic, and it just looked so beautiful.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
I think my favorite moment was I literally gasped out loud. When Benedict Cumberbatch was mentioning like the scrape on his face, at the same time Lola was mentioning the burns on her arm. I just put it together.
I already knew he was a creep.
Yes.
When he gave her candy. Hello.
Yeah.
Oh, I knew he was creep then.
That's interesting. I think the first time you knew that he was the guy who did it already.
Oh, yeah. I knew he was trouble when he walked in.
That's actually a fantastic scene, that first scene where he gives the candy and he's like sort of palming off the twins and flirting with this 15-year-old girl.
Yes.
I think that scene is played incredibly well. I definitely agree with you both that the first half is the best half of the movie, if we're going to make that distinction. I wanted to focus on that you know, tracking shot because it's one of the best things I've seen in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, like the just general enjoyability, that first half is great.
And also, I didn't even recognize it was Juno Temple.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
she was nominated for Best Picture.
We're both going for two different jokes there, and I reckon they were both awful.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah,
I was really surprised that she popped up in it.
Yeah.
Because she's American.
What?
No, I don't think so. I think she's British.
Is it?
Yeah,
I thought she was American.
I think she's
British. Seen her be American.
Well, she's an actor.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
I don't. James McAvoy is Scottish.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
So she wrote
Benedict Cumberbatch, South African.
Yeah. Keira Knightley from New Jersey.
Yeah.
No.
This is a fun game.
If you had to pick out a scene, Rosie, what was your favorite?
It's either the moment he's giving her the letter or when they're looking for the twins in the garden. Like, that was shocking.
I forgot.
That really frightened me, actually.
I honestly forgot the entire, like, crux of why he goes off to war. I forgot why this all, you know, why it breaks down, what happens. I was honestly thinking it was literally just the fact that they were having, like, a secret love affair. I just thought it was that Bryony saw them in the library and that was it, because it's like, oh, you're not allowed to do that. And the fact that it's like someone commits assault on an underage girl and they pin it on James McAvoy's character was, really, really shocking to see again.
Right. Yeah. I knew that she makes an accusation against him.
Right.
But I didn't know of all the different things that build up. Like, I thought it when he gave her the letter, I actually thought that was it, and that was going to turn into something.
I think by that point, that is what I thought on the rewatch. Yeah,
is that letter the first accidental text to a fuck buddy? Sorry, I said that by accident.
Yeah.
Unless you're into it,
you up, cunt. But yeah, that whole scene with the looking at night, and you're referring to like when he comes back?
No, I'm referring to when she shines a spotlight on Juno Temple.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. It does. That's what I mean. Like, it was actually shocking. Plus, I thought all the accusation stuff had happened. Like, I thought the letter and then in the library. I thought we were done with all of that. And then it was like, no, it's going to get way worse.
Yes.
I knew going into it that there was going to be something like that an accusation is made. I thought it was Saoirse's character saying it about herself and pinning James McAvoy for that.
Yep.
Which is kind of, after the movie had been out a while and I knew that, was also kind of putting me off because I didn't know how they were going to handle that, and maybe they were making it like a creepy, hey, these things happen kind of way.
Right.
That's why I didn't want to see them handle that. I think they handled it very well in this.
Yes.
You could see the logic according to this confused 12-year-old.
Right. That...
Yeah, it wasn't as malicious as I thought it would be. Like, I thought she just was going to completely make something up. Whereas in this, it was... Like, you could have... Like, I'm not sure if she genuinely thought it was him and she just kind of let her jealousy inform that subconsciously, or if she was, you know, really intent on falsely accusing him.
That's interesting. That was going to be one of my questions, is... Do you think she did it on purpose? You know, was she full on lying in that moment when she was like, quote unquote, testifying? Or did she believe, you know, that she saw him? Because watching the movie, throughout that first half up until we sort of rejoin Bryony as you know, older woman, as a nurse, or as a, you know, older than a child, I thought fully that she made it up, that she knew that it wasn't Robbie, and that she was absolutely doing it out of jealousy and anger, and yeah, it was doing it maliciously.
I'm in agreeance. I think that is the case. I don't think the movie plays it as malicious as well. I think it does, but malicious in the sense that this is what a 12-year-old's idea of being mean is.
I'm on the same page.
And
she's doing it not knowing the full ramifications of what is going to happen to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the I'm not convinced that it was completely malicious. I think enough happened in the lead up that she could convince herself. Like, she could make the logical assumption that it was him, because she's starting to get this picture of him as being like this sex crazed maniac.
So here's the thing. I didn't think that she believed that. You know, when she's talking to Lola about that stuff, I think that she was saying it because she was jealous.
Yeah.
I think that she was, like, completely clear in it being them flirting. But I think that she reveals later in the movie, as she is older, or at least she claims when she talks to them, you know, in the made-up bit, that she genuinely was confused.
Yeah.
That she genuinely thought that it might have been him. She didn't know that it wasn't, or definitely that it was, but she thought that it was him.
Yeah.
They definitely play out the jealousy angle quite well initially, pinging on James McAvoy, because at the end of the day, Saoirse just wanted to James Mac on that boy. I felt like we had to get a little joke in there somewhere.
Oh, well, that was the one to go with.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I think that you deserve to be sent to jail and then off to the war.
Now, are you doing that maliciously, or are you just jealous that you can come up with James Mac on that boy?
I'll never tell, or I will reveal it in a book. All right, as an older person.
Make sure you keep the haircut, though.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. I've kept it for the past 10 years. that's interesting. So I think we're kind of split. You thought she was being honest in her perception the whole time, Rosie.
Yeah, but I think, you know, people aren't always honest with themselves, are they?
Mm.
And I think the film plays into that by not showing Benedict Cumberbatch's face fully in the first assault scene.
Yeah.
Like, they play it a bit smoke and mirrors. You never see anyone's real features. You don't know what's happening. You just have...
Because they're all wearing tuxedos, so they do all look exactly the same from
but
behind.
I mean, I don't know. From my point of view, I 100% believed it was Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, as a viewer, I wasn't like, well, maybe she's right. Maybe it was Robbie.
That's a good point. It's not a mystery or anything. No. Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, it was left slightly ambiguous on purpose in terms of whether she was outright falsely accusing him.
Yeah.
Because she's 12.
Sure.
So she's just a kid at the same time.
I think that's probably one of the better aspects of the movie. The fact that it can be, it is set up to be somewhat ambiguous.
Yeah.
And I like how they didn't have, they were confident enough in portraying Bryony as a bad person that they didn't have a adult character coaxing her to say, no, you know what you saw. You saw it was Robbie.
Sure, because, yeah, they actually give her enough opportunities in that first, you know, sequence to change what she's saying. They they are saying like...
Did you see him? Because she believes it was him.
She does.
But she actually can't say that she saw him because she didn't see anyone's face.
Completely. And I also think that it seems like the adults maybe don't 100% necessarily think it would be Robbie. Like, they all know him.
Yeah.
They are. It feels to me like they're questioning her in a like... Are you sure about that? Because I don't think it seems right.
Yeah.
My other big question for this movie, for you two, is Bryony a bad person?
That's interesting because I was going to – you mentioned before, Tim, something about her being a bad person.
Positioned as a bad person.
And I kind of thought in my head, I didn't think she was because she's a child. So there's nothing you can do as a child I would label them a bad person. It's a kid. Right.
Your personality hasn't fully formed.
Well, they don't understand consequences. It's a big part of choosing to behave in a right way or a wrong way is because you know what the consequences are.
And I definitely think that's what the film is framing it as.
I think I agree with that. Yeah.
I agree. She's not a bad person. She's a child. She's 12 years old. And I think that plays into why we all thought the first half was better as a movie. Because it's more of a classic story structure that we've seen in movies before. Like, it's well-paced and the music's kicking in. It's very well-edited. And we just see the inner workings of this little child's brain making a decision that we know as a adult audience is going to affect everyone around her, but we can also see and sympathize with the brain of a child, and she's doing this out of emotion.
Yeah.
And then for the rest of the movie, you're just seeing her now as an adult living with that decision and the ramifications that's brought to her life and just the regret, which isn't as fun to experience in a movie, but still important for the character of Bryony to expand from just these childish notions and become a fully fledged character who can express regret.
Yeah.
I think I agree with all of that. I think that it's tough to sum up simply because I agree, Tim, with everything that you said. And I think, Rosie, that she
can
is-
you also say thank you for leaving such a big pause at the start and end of that sentence, so it's going to be very easy for me to cut around the phrase, I agree with everything you say, Tim, and use that sound clip for the rest of my life.
Yep.
Please continue.
I think she's getting
punished. What do you say about that, Ben? And then I'll put it in here.
Have to like continuously talk so you can never edit it into anything.
Do you know what I'll say to that? There you go. You just gave myself clear space.
I think she's getting punished for that childhood mistake by the rest of her life. You know, like what happens to her, at least what we see. Because as a sort of 18-year-old, I think she is, as a nurse, it's awful. It's terrible. And she is living with the ramifications of it. I think where it gets complicated for me is around the ending. Because it's sort of like, well, Bryony does end up a very successful author.
Yes.
And the book that she writes, her last book, because she's about to die, the book changes what happens in reality. Like, that interview is really weird because she's like, I tried to be honest. It's autobiographical. Everyone's name is the same. But then she completely changes the consequences of the awful thing that she did.
Yeah, so she claims that she's doing it to give them a kindness.
Yeah, but they're dead.
But maybe she's doing it for herself.
That is what I think. That's when it gets to the end, and that is what the way she justifies that, I think I don't buy it. I do not buy that from her, which is interesting because
I think that's the point, if I could jump in.
Yeah.
Because I think that's, Rosie, you hit it on the nail where she's saying that this is to commemorate the lives of her sister and her partner that both died. Mm-hmm. She wants to, in the fiction of her book, give them a happy ending. But she's also doing it for herself.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think she's completely doing it for herself.
Yeah, I think exactly. I think we're just saying the same thing here. She's doing it.
Yeah.
No, I disagree.
Right.
I do think, on the one hand, by her not having to write the reality of how it ended is easier on her. Mm-hmm. But I can't help but like get caught up in the romance of her doing it for them as well.
Okay.
Mm. Not them, like not, you have to kind of suspend reality to kind of accept that, obviously, because they're dead.
Yes.
But yeah, like there's part of that I just think is very romantic and I buy into that. But yeah, like obviously as well for herself, she doesn't have to suffer through admitting how bad things went because of what she did.
I think the question of is Bryony a bad person, that's the central question being asked of the movie.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite mean of you to ask it to us, Ben, because I also wrote a question about this movie and the question was, how deep is the fountain that she jumps into?
Oh.
That's quite a deep fountain.
It is. It's like the deep end of a pool.
Yeah.
You wouldn't need to submerge completely usually in a fountain to pick something
It'd
out of
like
it.
It'd be like knee height.
Exactly. Well, you're just up to the elbow.
Yeah.
You just reach in up to the elbow.
Yeah. Hey, Jen. Anyway, in summation, Bryony is
that is a really good point.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
wow.
is a really
idea. Was that in the IMDb goofs?
Fountain's too big.
Fountain's too deep.
IMDb goofs would have been a great alternate title for this podcast.
I guess, so we've got, is Bryony a bad person is the point of the film, but the technique of showing multiple perspectives of the same event basically is the other point of the film because it's about subjectivity and memory and perception. So I think we've just solved the film.
But yeah. Yes. I wish I hadn't said anything then. I wish I just let that sit.
Just say, I completely agree with you, Ben. I'll edit it in.
Well, Joe Wright, you've done it again. Joe Wright, you're a filmmaker that can do Joe wrong.
Oh. Just on that, quickly, just Joe Wright directed one of my favourite Black Mirror episodes.
Okay. What else has Joe Wright done apart from Pride and Prejudice?
He did Pride and Prejudice.
Apart from that, Tim.
I'm going through it chronologically.
Skip that one.
I'm just looking it up now, but off the top of my head, Pride and Prejudice, this, and then I think the follow-up to this would have been Hannah.
Which was would have been quite a while later.
It was, The Soloist. Another, Joe Wright's had a strange career where he kind of peaks and troughs with great Oscar success, like this, Atonement. What was the other one I was thinking of? The Darkest Hour as well, which was nominated last 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But also things like Pan, the Peter Pan movie, as well as The Soloist, which, yo.
Peter Pan reviews panned.
All right. Well.
that felt more like a Tim Clark joke.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, Pan was bad.
Pan bad.
Pan.
Oh, The Soloist, that was Robert Downey Jr., Jamie Foxx?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I think was posed to take the Oscars by storm.
Yeah.
Like before it had come out. Everyone's like, oh, this is the follow-up to Atonement. He's going to get all these nominations. And I don't think it did very well.
Yeah.
Anna Karenina did fine in like production-wise, but nothing.
Was that Knightley as well?
Yeah, that's
was
Knightley as well.
Yeah.
And we'll see how he goes with The Woman in the Window this year.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm very excited for that. I'm loving that Amy Adams
Looking out the window for half a minute.
I'm loving that Amy Adams is being cast in a lot of the adaptations of books I read. Because she was in Sharp Objects as well.
Yes.
So fucking good in that. And it's a great book. And Woman in the Window is a great book as well. So I'm really excited to see her.
She is one of my favorite actors.
Yeah. She can be in everything. Her and Tom Hardy. Mm. If they were the only two actors in the world, I'd be very happy.
This is the point of the show where we decide if this should have been nominated for Best Picture.
Is this a Joe Wright or Joe Wrong?
I haven't seen, in terms of the category itself for that year.
Yeah.
I haven't.
To let you know, Zodiac also came out in 2007. What were the other snubs? There was a couple of... Oh, The Assassination of Jesse James came out in 2007.
Diving Bell and the Butterfly.
Yep.
Ratatouille,
famously.
Fucking Ratatouille.
Sweeney Todd.
But the category... Wait, what was the question?
Should this have been nominated for Best Picture?
Yes.
That was a very easy yes.
Yeah, I loved the movie. I thought it was great. Oh, I loved the first half. I really loved the first half. When I think about it now,
I think that given the other films in contention, I would have nominated this for Best Cinematography, and I probably would have wanted it to win because I think that it is incredibly impressive in this movie, but I don't think I would have nominated it for Best Picture.
But I think the story deserves recognition as well. But
it is a book.
But, okay, yeah. But, like, yeah. It's not just that it looked pretty is what I'm saying.
Right.
Like,
Rosie hasn't read the book. That's why Amy Adams isn't in it. Yeah.
I think that's fair, but I
hear Amy Adams is up for the role of Spot in Spot Goes to the Zoo.
She'll kill it.
Yeah.
She will.
Yeah.
But No Country for Old Men 1, is that
yeah.
right? Yeah. That is the fantastic.
So you're happy with
I agree
how
that,
reality played out?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't seen Michael Clayton.
No one has except for Tim.
I've seen the start and end of There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm. As I said on that episode, they're the best parts.
Yeah. That's why I watched them.
Yeah, yeah.
I was told because I started watching it and I was like, fuck, I can't watch much more of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not interested.
Did you get to any dialogue? Or was it?
Yeah, all... yeah, yeah. Okay. I got to the point where, you know, the son is now like 6 or 7 or something. Okay. And he's going to the towns or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I was told, oh, but the ending's so good. You got to watch the ending. And I was like, well, I'll just watch the ending now. And I thought, I probably would have appreciated the ending more if I'd watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think we really missed out by not having you on that episode. You know, yeah. The plot is, you know, he's an old man. He's going to the towns or whatever, and his son, his stupid, shitty son,
and then
six.
He has a milkshake at the end, and that's about it.
Something about oil.
We're out of there.
Yeah.
20-minute movie. Perfect.
Oil.
I'm very happy this is – I loved it, mm-hmm. and I definitely think it should have been nominated at the time. I'm kind of surprised that it was because I would have thought that going into it, anyone who would have been watching this expecting a fighty-duddy British drama would have been upset with the vulgarity. And
right, in terms of the Academy voters.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you think of the typical Academy voter, mm-hmm. an older, straight, white man
yep.
who is used to and in the past would have voted vehemently for these types of merch. I'm thinking of like Merchant Ivory films in the 80s.
Yeah.
They would have been voting for those.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing something like this so flip that mold on its head, I don't think they would have voted for it.
Yeah,
and
right.
the opposite, for the younger people, I don't think they would have gone into it at all.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, I think
and
I
if
agree.
If they had, they would have changed their opinion, but they would have gone into it with
lower expectations.
Lower expectations as well as their own preconceived notions of what the film is going to be.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So that's why I thought initially, that's why I was saying earlier on, it is a surprise for me. And if they had done it again, with just I think this would have been the lowest voted in the top five. That's why I think that is the case.
Yeah.
I'm very glad it did. And I think it came out nowadays, it would still get a nomination just because, not just because there is a deeper 10 pool of nominees.
Mm.
I think there has been more of a increase on flipping the mold of these types
like
of
traditional.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with the Oscars as well, I think sometimes they do go out of their way to vote for something that's not so traditionally Oscar baity. That was the whole idea the belief behind the Jennifer Lawrence Academy Award was, you know, try and get younger people interested
right.
in the Oscars by
right.
giving it to Hunger Games girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that is true because this year, in particular, we're talking about 2007, these five films, this is the closest to a traditional Oscar baity film of the five nominees. Because There Will Be Blood seems like an outlier. It's a very bleak story of a cruel man. Juno's
That's
just
true.
An indie flick.
Mm-hmm.
Michael
mm-hmm.
Clayton is, as we said last week, it's Ray Donovan with George Clooney.
Yeah, it's a man's name.
Yep, a man's name.
Mm-hmm.
And then No Country for Old Men. Yeah, it's got some clout behind it with people who have been up for nomination before.
Yeah,
it just,
but it's like more of a tropey genre thriller, sort of pulpy chase movie.
Mm. It's a horror action western.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that classic combo. I guess you're right. You're right. Atonement is the most stereotypical Oscar movie.
Yes.
But even that, it's still flipping the script on it and making it feel fresh and new.
Weirdly, I think I wouldn't have nominated it back then, but I think if it came out this year, it gets into the 8 to 10.
It's
yeah.
an absolute lock for an 8 to 10 lineup.
Yeah.
A personal top five of 2007. I could see it getting close, but I don't think it could make my top five. Yourselves?
Not my top five for that year, no.
I honestly have no idea what came out in 2007.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like Juno...
Juno I didn't love.
Mm.
When I would have seen it the year it came out.
Yep.
And so I was 17 at the time, so it would have been like your perfect demographic. But I was like, I think at the time I felt like it was trying a bit hard.
That's what I thought. But
yeah. But that could have been why I thought that, because you would have been running your mouth. And I'm like, well, whatever Ben says, I agree with.
Yeah. That's
at 17. We didn't mention, you're Ben's sister. I don't think we mentioned that once in this episode up until this point.
I think, well, we share the same last name.
Yeah.
I'll put it in the description.
Yeah.
That's fair. You don't have to know every movie that came out in 2007.
What else came out in 2007, Tim?
No Country for Old Men.
Ratatouille, as previously established.
I'm not a fan of Ratatouille, okay? I'm just not going to tell you
Pirates of the Caribbean, Spider-Man 3, Shrek the Third.
None of that stuff.
I reckon...
Once?
Movie Once.
Yeah, the prequel to Twice.
It's a musical.
No.
I think knowing you, it would probably be in your top five at the time.
No Country for Old Men would have been. We went and saw that on Boxing Day.
Mm.
The day it came out, I was really, really excited to see it.
Yeah.
And fucking loved it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would have been the top movie of the year for me.
Yeah, I think that does it for our discussion of Atonement. Good movie. With some interesting layers to it.
Hmm, yeah. Layered. Yeah. It was deep. It was a deep film.
Very good. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
Yep.
Even though we've talked about the plot points, this is still one of the most beautiful looking films I've ever seen. It's gorgeous.
That's it. Having seen it before, it wasn't, you know, necessarily lessened by knowing generally what happened. It's still filled with great performances. And
this film is a stunning movie. Joe, right on. Good night, everyone.
Next we'll be doing Michael Clayton. And then No Country for Old Men, right? That's it. That's
we'll
for
be
the
rounding
five.
Out the year.
Yeah.
2008.
So, watch Michael Clayton. Watch No Country for Old Men.
Yeah. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, the whole shebang.
Everything.
Thanks for listening. Before we go, I just want to say one of the...